matter that it's a tunnel down the house. But in any event, the Tikkun Miami quotes that. And he suggests that that's why you don't need a Tanai Kafel, because it's not really a full Kenyan. It's not subject to all the same conditions, and therefore that somehow differs. Again, I think there's a little bit that you have to figure out there. It's not fully satisfactory. Yisrael?
So according to the same Ramakna, that because it's not a full Kenyan, doesn't that affect...
The Kenyan rather than the Tanai?
Well, yeah, but also... Doesn't that affect that it might, because it's not a full Kenyan, it might not be full ownership, meaning that he wouldn't be able to use the Asurg as a mitzvah because only
is? So that's a good question, right? That's really what we want to try to figure out. We're somehow apparently threading a needle here, that it works for some things and not for other things, and it seems like that's a little bit too convenient. So that's what we want to try to figure out exactly, how we're having some things land on one side, having some things land on the other side. No.
Doesn't Tosto answer his own question by saying that it's just the way it was written down was that the way in Shas generally is that we only have it's only partially written down because we want to conserve space. So doesn't
why do I need another answer, you mean?
No, yeah, so meaning isn't the Sefer HaMakna just not his like totally avoiding Tosto's actual answer?
Yeah, I mean that's not the first time you see that. You know, it's okay. a number of approach, because also we discussed this some other time recently. Sometimes you also want to give the other answers because they might be relevant to teach another point. So even if one answer is satisfactory, you still want to add in, by the way, that we don't even need this, which is very important, halacha, right? So you're going to take that answer, so then you walk away not knowing whether it really is crucial or not. So you need to point that. If you feel that you don't need this, then you need to explain that, even if you could have answered it without that. So this could relate to another usage of Matana Menas L'Hachzir that comes up in the Rishonin, which I think I put on the original Mar Makomos sheet, by the way, which I assume by now everyone saw all the Mar Makomos. Okay, so hopefully later tomorrow we'll have a new topic and new Mar Makomos sheet. But it comes up in the context of Chametz. Right, so you saw that in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. So where does it come up in that context? What's going on over there? Mechiras Chametz. Right? Mechiras Chametz. It's a fascinating concept, which I always enjoy talking about. In case of time, we'll talk about it a little bit more. But it's a topic which doesn't really appear in Shas itself, at least the Shas Bavli, the way we have it. The Mishnah talks about selling chametz for good, to get rid of it. But what we have nowadays, our practice of selling chametz essentially temporarily, is a little bit of a newer idea. It's mentioned in a Tosefta, in a more limited context. But the Rishonim already talk about it as a practice for somebody who has chametz right before Pesach that he doesn't want to destroy, so he works out some deal with a nachri that he's going to get the chametz back afterwards. So the way we do it nowadays, without going into every step of it, but just the bottom line is that we sell the chametz before Pesach with about 7 or 8 kinyanim, mentioned a little bit this year, and we sell it absolutely. No conditions, no delay, no anything like that. And then, after Pesach, there is the sale back. So the sale is complete before Pesach, and the sale is complete the other direction after Pesach. So that's not an example of Matana Menas L'Hachzir. And, in fact, the Rambam says it can't be Matana Menas L'Hachzir. The Rambam says, yes, you can give the chametz as a matana to your non-Jewish fellow traveler. Say you're on a boat, that's the case in the Tosefta, so you're on a boat and you're stuck with chametz that you need and you don't want to just throw overboard, so you can give it as a matana to your non-Jewish co-traveler, as long as you give it the matana gemura. It can't be a matana menas l'hachzir, and that's the way the Shulchan Aruch passes also. So the question is, why not? Why don't we say that if we paskin like our Gemara, Matana Menas L'Hachzir Shmei Matana? So why can't you do it? Why can't you do it here also? Give the chametz as a Matana Menas L'Hachzir. What do you think about that? Why do you think there is this condition that it shouldn't be Matana Menas L'Hachzir? No?
Well, the Rabbaz in the Megin Avraham writes that it's different. The way that Matana Menas L'Hachzir works in this case is like a pikadon. And so when you give your chametz over to the non-Jew, it's really still yours. They just have it in their custodianship. And so it's only once the tanai is fulfilled that l'mafreya, the chametz becomes the possession of the non-Jews during Pesach. So during Pesach itself, it's really still in the Jew's possession, and so he's over the law of having chametz on Pesach itself.
All right, correct. That's where the Radbaz understands it. There are other understandings, as we'll say in a minute, but did everyone follow that? So it's a little complicated. That basically what the Radbaz's approach is, Radbaz's approach is that essentially we don't know what's going to happen, because since everything is contingent on a t'nai being fulfilled, right? If there's no t'nai, then there's no deal here. So what's going to happen if, after Pesach, the purchaser says, you know what, I'm keeping it? So then it's going to turn out that, oh, you never got rid of your chametz. So are we saying it's too risky, so you shouldn't do it because maybe you may get messed over? So no, he's saying more than that, as Noah just explained. But he's saying that because it's all kind of contingent, you don't know what's going to happen, that means basically it's a pikadon. And since it's a pikadon, so then that's not good enough to get you out of Bayero Bayamazi. Now others question this explanation. Rekibe Eger, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, raises various questions, because the whole premise here is that you, as the Jewish person, you can't really control what's going to happen, because maybe the purchaser will say, I'm not going to come through with it tonight. So as Rekibe Eger points out, well, you kind of can. You can decide to be Ochel at that time. That if you say, all right, you want to keep it, you know what? That's totally what I was thinking too. Why don't you just keep it? And you can decide it's as if you accepted it. So that is in your control. So why don't we say that it should work for that reason? Also, why is it really the case that we have to say it's a pikadon that whole time? Why don't we just say that it's clarified retroactively, like we find probably everywhere else, that it was a kinyan? That once, if you're willing to gamble, let's say, and you're willing to wait and see what happens, so once it turns out that he gives it back to you, so then retroactively it was his the whole time, and you should be okay. So not everyone buys this explanation. Others say that it's simply mishum chumr de chametz. That because we're very machmir on chametz, and this whole deal we're a little bit nervous about, so we want it to be 100% on the up and up. So yes, we know you have an arrangement that you're going to end up getting it back, but we don't want it to be so explicit. We don't want it to be so contingent that he's only getting this because of giving it back to you. That's too much for us. Donnie?
So I think it's a question on both of these.
Mm-hmm.
Then how does this translate into Esrog? Because if you say according to the Radbaz, how could so retroactively
work
so
out.
Yeah, so you're saying retroactively your Bali Matzah won't be nullified, but the mitzvah will work? Like why is the mitzvah different than a man?
Right, so that's something we have to figure out. The question probably is still a question by itself, just for the why we have to define chametz retroactively, but it does seem to also call into question the whole Esrog idea. So first, let's try to figure out what the Rambam's getting at and what the Shulchan Aruch's getting at. Yeah, just parenthetically, you've heard me talk about Mecharis Chametz in the past, last year, I don't remember. It's interesting in general to question why there is such a controversy around Mecharis Chametz, because the whole concern that comes, oh, isn't it really all a joke because you're getting it back later? So you could question how much we have to worry about that. The Torah tells us Bayira Bayimatzeh, and the Torah tells us Tashbisu. We're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach, and we have to eradicate it, so we have to get rid of it. So how do you know, from trying to understand the intent of the Torah, that there's anything wrong with the situation where it'll come back to you after Pesach? That how do you know from the way the Torah presents the mitzvah and trying to figure out the Tameha mitzvahs, that there's anything wrong with having a plan in advance that will get you your chametz back afterwards? The Ran, in the beginning of Pesachim, says that the idea is that you shouldn't come to eat chametz on Pesach. That really, it's what we call gzeira min haTorah, that the Torah doesn't want you eating chametz on Pesach, and because since chametz is something you eat during the rest of the year, so you're used to eating it, and it has a chi of kare, so it's more severe of an avera than eating, let's say, bacon. So we're not worried about you having bacon in the house, because you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're not going to make yourself a bacon sandwich, because you never have one. And if you do, it's a lower level prohibition. But chametz, we're worried, you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Pesach, and you're hungry, you may make yourself a peanut butter sandwich, because you're used to having it 51 weeks a year. And chiyuv kares, so we're more worried about that. So basically, says the Rat, the whole point is, we have an extra level of protection, you shouldn't come to eat chametz on Pesach. So if that's the case, it's interesting that there's such a controversy about mechiras chametz, because lemaisa, as long as you don't have it during Pesach, it's not clear why letter of the law or spirit of the law, there's any concern about what happens afterwards. The whole intent is to keep you safe during Pesach time. How do you know that the Torah wants you to never see it again? That's an interesting question. So one could have said that not only should matana manas lahatzir be a matana everywhere, but maybe even within the spirit of the Yisr Chametz, the Yisr ownership of Chametz, it's taka not so offensive. But in any event, this is what the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch and others have shown them take, and that seems to be the concern, seems to be the policy. The Beis Yosef, by the way, not getting into the full details of Mechiras Chametz, but the Beis Yosef says you can do Mechiras Chametz as long as it's not a haram, as long as it's not a trick, basically. And the later Sfarim try to figure out, what do you mean? Of course it's a haram. That's the whole point. You're trying to get out of the Yisr, that's why you're doing it. So what do we mean when we say it's not a haram? So some say, like these were shown him, that it shouldn't be a matana manas la'atzir. Others say, like the ritva, that it shouldn't be done every year. Uh-oh, that's a problem. Others have different interpretations of what it means, that it shouldn't be a haram. This is among what's quoted in the later Sfarim, that it shouldn't be an explicit matana manas la'atzir. So, what exactly is the issue with matana manas la'atzir when it comes to chametz? So, Rabbi Shlomo Warman, want to comment to that?
No,
we can hear
Shlomo Warman first.
Okay, did you know him?
No.
It was Rebbe and Hank.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so Rabbi Shlomo Warman is a Chassadik of Racha, who was Rebbe and Hank, was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. So he wrote many Sfarim called Shayrus Yosef, and later years he wrote Sfarim on the Moadim. So he has a Sefer called Orus Yimei Hasuk, Orus Chag Hasuk, about Sukkos. And there he talks about Matana Manas Lahatzir in the context of Esrog. And he gets into a discussion about Chametz. So he suggests that the reason we're worried when it comes to Chametz, the Matana Manas Lahatzir, because indeed, like some of you pointed out, the Rabbaz has some questions you could ask, all these other explanations you could challenge. He suggests that when it comes to Matana Manas Lahatzir, that we have to assume that Bilus has two components to it, which is something that we've seen a little bit in some of the Rishonim already. Here, he's assuming that by its very nature, any kinyan that is temporary is called a kinyan aperos. Even though it would seem like that's really more of a machlokas HaRishonim, but he takes it pretty much across the board, especially because there's one Rishon which I didn't put on your list, so you can take a look, who says this explicitly, that is the Ran. The Ran in the Dara, Madav Chotes Amar Aleph, Zibra Maskol Amar Abaye, look it up. So he says that every Kenyan Luzman, by its nature, is automatically a Kenyan Haperos. And that essentially, there's still room to quibble whether that's actually referring to Matana Manas L'Achzit. He's assuming that that's a safe way to categorize Matana Manas L'Hatzir in general, even though, again, one could argue that not all the Rishonim agree with that, but he assumes that it's still applicable. That when it comes to owning an object, you have bilus, and you have the usage of the object you call kinyan haperos. So, essentially, a kinyan lizman is only going to be a kinyan peros. And therefore, maybe that's not good enough for chametz. If the Torah says, don't own chametz on Pesach, it means you shouldn't have bilus, you shouldn't have ownership. Even if you're letting someone else use it for now, it's still basically yours, it still maintains its connection to you, and that's going to be a problem. Now, the truth is, I think this explanation really does depend more on some of the Rishonim that we saw yesterday. But he's assuming it very broadly, that it works for other Rishonim as well, but at least maybe it is a workable answer for some of the Rishonim we saw. So you wanted to...
I was going to say something similar.
Let's say that just two dinim and I think Jonah said this the first day, right? You started to say something about Bilus and about okay, so we started to say
something
similar.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about one ever using the phrase like shtei dinim. That's because
it's too brisker.
Yeah, and
don't want to
also it's helpful to use phrases that we're familiar with. What the Gemara is saying, you know, can you pay risk, can you give, is probably helpful. But other people, I'm not sure how strictly like that follows in this exact sense or not. I think I've heard similar. It might be that I just heard from a Mormon instead.
Oh.
Just that the Rambam has something. First hand testimony.
Second hand testimony.
All the lines that Balas can have different aspects to it. And just really just taking an object and having multiple different aspects of ownership involved. So, like, the person who has it in Tal Salam and Tal Hafsir might have the aspects of Balas support. If it's lost, you don't have to pay for onus, or you don't have to pay for it.
Right, that we talked about yesterday a little bit.
So that could be a form, and those can all be individualized forms of bias, which would mean that there is some individualized form that still remains with the original owner. So therefore, both of them are full owners of different parts of the object.
See, which is interesting in of itself, just parenthetically, by the way. So those of you who have taken the Sai Sims class, not the B'Tzalacha one, the ethical and legal, so we talked there about ownership, right, and how ownership breaks down into five or six different concepts that are all bundled together. So theoretically, one could say that Bilus has different components too. The problem is, when is it valid to split them and when is it not valid to split them? So you could say, especially if we want to account for this Rambam and Shulchan Aruch by Chametz and still account for Esrog, that when it comes to Chametz, you have to get rid of every definition of Bilus. So if you're maintaining any part of it, then that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a violation, at least of the literal meaning of Bayra Bayimatze. The idea that you shouldn't own chametz, even without considering what the Tamei HaMitzvos is, still the literal meaning should mean you shouldn't own it at all. So if the Tanam Nasa Hachzer keeps you with some connection, that should be a problem. For Lulav, we have to figure out just how much of an ownership do you need. So it could be that the Din Lachem by Lulav and Esrog, maybe that's applicable in a way that you can share the Bilus. You can say, okay, you have enough Bilus that you're allowed to use it, even though the original owner maybe holds on to something. Maybe that doesn't contradict the ownership that the recipient needs in order to fulfill Lulav and Esrog. Possibly. Happens to be an interesting discussion that the Nesivus has a Chumrah, Nesivus and a Siddur, called Darach HaChayim. Nesivus wrote many, 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 many Svarim. So in the Sefer Darach HaChayim and Siddur, so he has a Chumrah that we talked about the process in the shuls, the way it used to be, that the Lulav and Esrog got passed from person to person to person before going back to the original owner. So the Nesivus writes that there has to be the right for the recipient to give it b'matana menasa hachzir to another person. Why? Because otherwise, if you don't have that right, it means you're missing din mamo. It means you're missing some monetary control over the item. And for an esrog to be considered lachem, has to have that din mamo, and has to have that monetary control. Now, there was a debate about this in later Svarim. Not everyone agreed that there is such a requirement by Lulav and Esrog. And Imre Bina, the Kalash Rav, the Rav Yerushalayim, about 150 years ago, Imre Bina writes that whether or not you believe there's such a thing as Din Mamon that is required for Lulav and Esrog, at the very least, you have to have some way that it's more yours than everybody else's. Because otherwise, not called Lachem. So therefore, at least, he thinks he agrees, whether he formulates it the same way or not, but he agrees with this idea that it has to be inherently true that you have to be able to give it to somebody else. Hi.
Can you kind of use a similar, I guess, mechanism for having a matana that you can't be makdish because you have to return it back? Like the same, like in a similar type of way that, like, technically you have the ability to give it to somebody else, but because of the nature of the Tanai, you have to give it back to the person as it were, and I guess not.
Oh, so if you recall, so this is basically the Rosh we spoke about yesterday, right? The Rosh and Kedushin, right, that you had started with. Right, that the Rosh says that part of the nature of the Matan Mas Ha'atzer, if you get a ring from your roommate, you can give this ring. Your roommate gives you Matana Manasa Hachzer, you can still use it for your Kala, you can still marry her with a straight out Matana, but you got it as Matana Manasa Hachzer because it's yours enough that you can use it for Kedushin. And the Tanai, he has the position that you can pay for it. Because even though you're not forcing her to give it back, so you might not be able to fulfill the Tanai, that's still enough. So that's essentially going to play out here, that this Chumrah that the Derech HaChaim has, for the Rosh, it works out anyway. The Rosh, it's correct, that Matana Maslachshir should be that you can give it to somebody else, and hopefully, certainly, if you do it, that they'll give it back to you, then it should work even without his Chiddush that you can pay for it. But the idea that you can transfer it, that's inherent. The Victor Katz, that might not work as well. If you say it's a Kenyan Zman, there's an interesting discussion about this. There's another beautiful sefer on the Moadim. It's called Arugas Habosim. It's called Avnei Shoam, rather. It quotes Arugas Habosim about this. Avnei Shoam is a very popular title for Svarim. There's a lot of Svarim called Avnei Shoam. This one is written by somebody from Belgium. And he has blue volumes on the Moedim. So in a Sefer on Sukkot, he has a whole back and forth about how to understand this question, whether you're actually required to have the ability to give it to somebody else. John.
So does Nesinus have any Rishonim to back up his Chumrah? Because we saw amongst Rishonim that you could kind of, when we say that you have to be able to be mocked or something to do with Matana Masa Atzir, we saw that some people just saw that as like a test, but they don't really believe that you can make conditions on Matana Masa Atzir and limit the ability of the person who's using it. So I'm just wondering if he's being chulik on Rishonim, if that any Rishonim.
I don't think so. I think he's assuming that you know, the test is enough, that it's basically, that's inherent in what Matana Masa Atzir means, that you're allowed to do that, and that's necessary for or certainly as long as you don't explicitly make it tonight that you can't do that, and that's enough. Now, there's also another interesting question that Rabbi Warman brings up that you could ask, but we also know more explicitly that an esrog has to have a heter achila. Now, you have to be allowed to eat it. So if you eat it, aren't you going to have a problem with returning it? So again, according to the Rosh, not so much of a problem because you can pay for it. But even not like that, so he assumes that heter achila really means that it could be considered heter achila also if it's heter achrina with somebody else. That if you're going to give it back to the original owner and he could eat it, that counts. Meaning that he's assuming heter achila is not really about bailus, that you have to own it enough to eat it. It's about the definition of a kosher esrog. It has to be edible halakhically. So if it's mutter for somebody to eat, even though you can't eat it because you got to give it back, that's also called a heter achila. Now, I should just mention that Rabbi Warman in his piece about Sukkot, so he goes back to say he thinks that's also pshat in our Gemara and in the Rambam. That when the Rambam says, that we discussed at the end yesterday, that it doesn't work by Kiddushin because you're not leaving anything with her. So he thinks the Rambam is saying the same thing, that essentially you're only giving Kinyan Haperos in the ring to the Kala, and the Chatzin is still holding on to that Bailus, and that's not enough. And he connects that to a Gemara on Daf Tes over here, where the Gemara says that if you say to a woman, this Gadish Lib Mana, that I want to marry you with this Mana, but you're not actually giving her the money yet, you're giving her a Mashma. So the Gemara says it's no good because mana inkan, mashkan inkan. She doesn't have the money, and the mashkan she doesn't have either, because the mashkan is going to go back to you. So essentially, he connects those ideas that just like the mashkan is basically still tied to you, and the money shouldn't have yet, so too, a matana manasa haksir, the bailus is still going back to you, and therefore, that's not enough. Now, we could say, like we also discussed yesterday, that if the whole point of Kesef Kedushin is there has to be a Nesina from the Baal, so we could say that it's a lack, it's a deficiency in Nesina, that if you're throwing it with a literal string attached, so it pops back like the yo-yo we discussed yesterday, Right, so that's also a pretty unromantic way to do things. Right? During the wedding, you give her the ring and the yo-yo, and then as soon as she walks down the aisle, you just walk, take it back. So that's also not the great way to start things. So that perhaps isn't even called an asina, and that's really maybe the whole issue. So I still wanted to say a few words about pidgin abens, and maybe we'll just start with that tomorrow, but then we'll transfer to Arev. Just a quick update, right after Shem, I'm going to meet with Rabbi Orlian and Rabbi Bacon about what I mentioned to you last week, that we're going to try to work out something of learning a little bit on Thursdays with JSS students. So just stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have more information about that. We hope to try to implement that this week. And just to quickly review what we spoke about, so we talked about the question of how does it work to make a kinyan on Yantif if it's there's a prohibition of kinyan. We mentioned the Magen Avraham says Tzarich Mitzvah is mutter. Sefer HaMakna over here quotes the view that it's mutter because Matan Nas L'Hachzer. We don't totally know how to make that work with the idea that a kinyan is prohibited because of Ksiva, why that should be any different. And he connects that to Tosa's question about why do we not need to deny Kofel here. And then we talked about how this comes up also in the context of chametz, that when it comes to chametz, we find the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, saying that it can't be matana menasa hachzer, and we asked why. We had the Radbaz, a complicated approach, that we don't know if it's actually going to work, because we don't know if the tanai will be fulfilled, and until then it's just a pikadon, or maybe it's a chuvah of the chametz, as others understand. And we mentioned by Warman's suggestion that there's two dinim here, the bailus and the usage of the item, and that a kinyan lasman, it says, based on that ran in the darim, is always considered to be only a kinyan peiros. We mentioned this. Not totally satisfying to associate that with all the Rishonim, but it could possibly be an approach here. And then we talked about whether there is a requirement that the Lulav and Esrog, you have to be able to give it to somebody else in the Tamar Asla Hafzir. The Nesivus Chumrah and others agreed, partially disagreed. And the question of the Heter Achila that has to be present for Esrog, how about that? So we discussed how, according to Rush, it shouldn't necessarily be a problem. But otherwise, Warman suggests that if someone else is allowed to eat it, that's enough, which means it's really a din in the qualification of the esrog, not a din in your ownership. And then he talked about how that could also be an approach for the Rambam in Kiddushin, that it has to be Hanah that is Nishar, that maybe that means that it's not going to be effective if you're still holding on to the bailus of the ring. And we went further to say maybe that's simply not called a nesina that should be effective for the purpose of kedushin. So again, tomorrow, as Hashem, will start with the sugya of Arev. Maybe we'll spend 5 minutes at the beginning just with a point or two about pidgin aben. And everyone should stay warm and stay dry and stay safe. And that's all the